Welcome to Quiver, the Green Arrow podcast. This is our 14th episode for The Odyssey. I'm one of your co-hosts, Amanda Konkin.
And I am your other one, the other co-host, Michael Cohen.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming back to listen to us. And we're excited. Hopefully you liked what we did last week. A little bit of news, a little bit of reader feedback.
Just in time, too, because this week we have huge news. But you know what? Let's incorporate it into this wait, maybe that's my email.
Okay.
No, okay, we'll just talk about it. You can see we don't really prepare anything.
Hey, I try to prepare, and then Mike's like, no, let's not.
People don't want to watch the news. They want to be a part of our conversation.
Okay, that's true. So it is genuine in that.
Yeah, this is hanging out in my living room watching Arrow.
Yeah.
We're just inviting all of these nice people
to join us
without having to clean up after them or offer them drinks.
That's true.
And
we're going to give you the greatest news ever that you probably already know because you listen to Quiver the Green Arrow podcast and therefore are probably fans of Arrow. So
I hope so. Or you're just fans of us, in which case, cool, but you should be watching the show. It's really good. As evidenced by the news that it is...
back for season 2! Yay!
And at a lower octave, so maybe people can hear, it's been renewed.
Nude.
So
yay! Early renewal! Because we love it so much, and obviously they're not stupid over at the CW.
That's
they
the
know.
CW for you, though. Yeah. They're fond of their early renewals. When something's a success, they don't let it go.
Yeah.
Which is why Supernatural's going into its 9th season.
Yes.
That being said, quick tangent, Supernatural, the last couple episodes, as good as it's ever been.
Oh, God.
Such an awesome show.
See, and then
different direction, and not where it was going when it was the first 5 seasons, but coming into its own again in the 8th season.
Good.
Just like, I'm not that the quality ever dipped on Supernatural,
no,
like it did
just,
with Smallville.
You know, sometimes in season 8, it's...
Yeah, but sometimes, like, it's hard to be consistently good for that long. And last season was maybe a little bit rocky, but had some good stuff. But this season, what they're doing with Sam and Dean as characters has been awesome.
Cool.
So early renewal on that, early renewal for Arrow, which means that all of the stuff that they're building up to for the end of the season that they haven't shot yet, so they'll probably make some changes. It's probably one of those situations where they've got 2 final scenes and now they'll film the other one. And it'll be the cliffhanger that leads us into season 2.
Yeah.
A second season, which means a second season of Quiver the Green Arrow podcast. So
that's the more exciting news.
Is that the more exciting
news? That we get to come back. Yay. And someone on Twitter tweeted me, too, just following up with some news from last week. They said, did you see the photo of Alex Kingston and Paul Blackthorne? And I said, no, where is this gem of a Marvel? And I feel like perhaps it doesn't exist, and maybe it was a Photoshop thing, but I want to find it. So if you have the photo,
I would just post it on the Facebook page
because I would die to see it. I'm so excited. It took a week for that to resonate, really. Alex Kingston coming on, obviously, if you didn't listen last week, as Black Canary. Well, I'm calling her Black Canary, as Dinah Lance, but you know.
I think that you're onto something.
Yeah.
I think that her being on towards the end of the season is going to be an indication that one of the reasons why she's gone is because of Black Canary-like things.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why Detective Lance has it out for vigilantes could be because of what it's done to his relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that there's going to be a connection between Black Canary and Merlin.
Yeah.
And the Cult of the Squiggly Line.
Yeah.
Which we still don't have a name for. We know that they're... What
the
are they working...
Happening?
The Happening?
Is
no,
that
that's
what
a bad
this?
No, the...
Oh, we're
I can't remember.
This.
They say it again in this episode.
The incident, the... It's... Oh, man.
It's such a generic thing
that it's just...
Yeah.
Remember when we said... And you know what? I'm going to scold you for a moment, Arrow writers, because we said, like, 7 episodes ago that if you are going to keep dragging this out, you better come up with a bloody brilliant name for whatever it is that you're doing, and you didn't because it's so unforgettable that we have forgotten.
No, it's so forgettable.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
So forgettable. Yes. Anyways, so I want to know, it better be a really good name for what the actual thing is, because maybe they're not really mentioning it yet, but
Well, it's one of these... I think it's one of the things that they've been doing with the vigilante, with Oliver himself, is that they don't have... He hasn't been consistently called one thing or another throughout the entire series. So, I think it's... Everything's building towards the end of the season.
Right.
And I think that when we come back next season, some things will possibly be a little bit more nailed down. Like, he will be Green Arrow. I hope so. At least Arrow. I mean, if you're going to get rid of the green part, that's fine. I'm cool with that. We got the acknowledgement of it earlier in the season with the moment at the dinner table. But we know he's the Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Can we not just have Lois Lane pop by for one episode and just get Erica Durance to pop in and be like, I'm just in Starling City on a news case or just on a lead.
Yeah.
Like, how about that Green Arrow guy? And people are like, Green Arrow, right?
That's a good name. It should stick.
The reason why I mentioned Lois Lane is because she's the one who named Superman.
Yes.
She gives a lot of Superman characters their names because she's a reporter. So.
But it's... I think that once they bring in Black Canary, or once we get whatever that becomes, whether it's Dinolands, whether it's Dinolorolands, then you'll get Green Arrow. Like, it's just sort of part and parcel. And next week, we've got Dodger, so we've got Roy Harper, so we'll deal with that a little bit.
Potentially.
Possibly. So there could be some stuff coming.
We're a little...
a little wary about...
Yeah, not sure exactly. Because the preview at the end of this episode does not indicate anything of Roy Harper showing up, because you'd think that would be a big deal.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. So
next week, not looking so great.
Yeah. But anyways, well, this week, let's get back to this week.
This week looking all right.
Actually, some other news. I'm just going to put it out there. News? It's a dynamic thing. I just have to apologize for Michael Cohen putting things at the ends of our episodes that are somewhat embarrassing that I'm going to say. Sometimes those Easter eggs, I let Mike do the editing. And then he's like, hey, did you listen to last week? So I was like, I haven't really got around to it yet. And then I go home and bury my head in a pillow because we just talk about things and then they end up on the episode. But it's fine. I just maybe will... I feel that made up for also me cutting Mike off a lot last episode. I have to watch myself. We've already started, and I already noticed myself sort of jumping on the ends of your sentences and, like, trying to talk more.
That's a conversation that we had after we finished recording last week. Amanda was a little bit eager.
I just had lots to say, and you would say things that were predictable, so I finished your sentences for you. Yeah. I don't know. Nothing wrong. So I had to go back and I had to listen to a couple episodes and be like, is this actually true? And then I didn't feel so bad because you had posted things on the end of a couple episodes, and I'm like, you know what? It's fine. It all comes back around. So in other news, Mike and Amanda Dynamics. Yay.
Just stop saying things you'd be embarrassed about while we're recording.
I'm not... It's not embarrassed so much as it is awkward. Maybe that's what it is. Whatever. But they're entertaining. They were entertaining. We just sort of talk about random tangential things. Like the 20-minute podcast that we recorded before recording.
It was like a half an hour.
Before we sit down to record Arrow and then or Quiver, and then we just go
off. You guys
off.
Might get a special bonus episode this week by itself of us just talking about a million different things.
Yeah.
I think we're just in one of those moods because we're on a tangent right now.
Yeah, we are.
It's going to be an interesting episode to talk about.
So sorry about that. Because we actually will talk about this episode. Because
we'll talk about Green Arrow at some point today.
We will. And it's because it's a big cliffhanger, and maybe I will preface how the tone of this recording is going to go. Because I feel the reason that we're not really talking about this particular episode is because after last week when we were like, cliffhanger, and what's happening, and Felicity, and I was a bit underwhelmed.
Yeah.
So it's good that we have other things to talk about. I mean, still a solid episode, and I really like all the things that are happening, but that's why we're maybe tangenting about other things.
Maybe a little bit. You know what the problem is that we got an episode, we took a break and we got a rerun of a season one episode this week, but by virtue of the fact that it mostly happened on the island. So it was like, last week ended on this huge cliffhanger of him confronting his mother. And then we saw him getting shot in the trailer, so we knew that was going to happen. So it wasn't surprising or dramatic. We were just kind of like, watching the watch, going, when's it going to happen? Because let's get into the episode already. And then it didn't really tie up anything. It did tie it up, but it tied it up in a really sloppy bow by saying that Oliver refuses to acknowledge what's going on with his mom, and that she's not gonna be honest about what happened and why the vigilante was there. So really, it was kind of a non-starter. It's, you know, it's a little bit like an improv. The one of the rules for improv is yes and.
Yeah.
Anytime anybody who's out there doing improv that doesn't know that, this is very, very important information. And so, you know what? It's good information. It's good advice for life.
Life, yeah.
If you just yes and everything, instead of a no, and worse, a no. Yeah.
So thank you for putting that in perspective. Yeah,
yeah. Like it very much like it happened last week. He confronts her, and they just gave us a no.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, yeah, that happened. We're not doing anything with it, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that something will come of it in a few episodes, because that's not what this episode was about.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they did tie it up when they could have left it a little bit loose. And it just... That's not... When we came into this episode, that's what we wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then we didn't get to see any of it, so...
Yeah, and thank you for reflecting that, because up until this moment, I didn't really realize what it was. But that's exactly right. We got a season, like an early season one episode, because it's basically all island. And we didn't get any of the now stuff, right?
Yeah.
That we want.
All season one, no season five.
Yeah.
It's going to be really confusing when we're in season three, and we're talking about season three flashbacks and season eight.
Yeah, and like what it's actually... It's like,
no, season seven? Season seven at that point?
Yeah.
And
if you haven't been listening to all of The Quiver, this is us saying that they actually started Arrow in season five, and all these flashbacks are season one, because he's got 5 years on the island. So, it's exciting.
Let's get to emails.
Emails! Hey, here's one from Mason Castillo. And it says, Quiver break, sad face, as the subject line. Hey, this is Mason, an avid listener that just freaking loves Arrow and loves Quiver. Although, I have a question about the break. So, the break is for 2 weeks. Does that mean that after the 2 weeks, you'll go back to do podcasts for the episodes within the 2 weeks? Or are you just skipping them altogether? I full out love the podcast. It makes me see things I didn't catch the first time and gives me a different speculation, so I was just wondering. And yes, Amanda, I'm typing this on my Apple device. And I'm having a blast. So, the other two aside, yay for... Apple devices, but whatever. No, we're not going anywhere. Arrow's going somewhere. So that, we'll clarify that from last week. So we talked about last week how after the end of February, we're not back until March 20th. And that's actually not us, Quiver, going away. It's Arrow going away for 2 weeks. And we just happen to think that that's a great time for Arrow to take a break, because Quiver, we would also like to take a break for 2 weeks.
There's a reason why shows go on hiatus.
Yeah.
So there's a reason why podcasts also go on hiatus with their recording shows.
Yes. So that's why we had to read this from Mason. So don't worry, Mason. We will still be doing episodes each time they have an Arrow episode.
Yes.
It's just that there is a break of Arrow in early March, and we will also... be not then just sitting here and talking, Amanda and Mike randomly talking. Maybe we'll compile all of the tangential things that we talk about before episodes and release something for you to listen to, Mike and Amanda. Anyways, so we'll, every time there's an Arrow episode, we'll try to get something out for you. But we will be gone for 2 weeks of March, because Arrow will as well. So find something else to fill up your Wednesday nights, because there won't be, or watch reruns. Those are fun.
Yep.
It's good.
Watch Smallville.
Yeah. Watch some Smallville, you guys.
Read some comic books.
Yeah, read some comics. Yay. There's all sorts of stuff that we can do that are Arrow-related.
Catch up on Supernatural.
That's true. I'm a month behind. I need to get on that.
Yeah, you do.
It's
so good.
Yeah.
I have an email to read as well. This one's from Brandon, who has written in before. And he says, hi, guys. The last episode was really great. I don't know who that blonde lady was that was helping the villain guy from Once Upon a Time, but all I can say is, hello, nurse. That's an Animaniacs reference. I mean, I think Animaniacs might have been referencing something else.
But
as far as I know, being a child of the 80s/90s, that is an Animaniacs reference. She has an open invitation to visit my TV screen every Wednesday night. I'm so excited that Arrow was picked up for another season, as well as the Quiver podcast. It's Quiver the Green Arrow podcast, you guys. You gotta say the whole thing in order for it to sound awesome. I can't wait to see what kind of training Oliver gets on the island from Slade Wilson. I was shocked with the ending of the episode... he's talking about last week's episode. When Oliver said he was going to chat with his mom, I didn't expect him to just break into his mother's office window. next episode will be amazing. Because Felicity will be back. Okay. I'm so excited Felicity will be upgraded into a series regular in season 2. Congrats to Emily Bett Rickards. I can't wait to see the growing relationship between Oliver, Felicity, and Diggle. And I hope they get a chance to relax at the Big Belly Burger restaurant after a job well done saving the city. Keep up the great work, Amanda and Michael. P.S. I hope Amanda had a lovely Valentine's Day. It's Valentine's Day right now.
Yeah. And we're hanging out with you and a show we love. Yay.
Yeah.
So happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Well, this won't be Valentine's Day.
It will have been Valentine's Day. Actually, I posted you guys a Valentine's card on the Quiver Facebook page. Yeah. So hop over there.
That's great.
Facebook.com/QuiverPodcast to see the Valentine's card that I shared with all of you. Mm-hmm. It's very appropriate, mm-hmm. I think. It was a good one. It's interesting that Felicity is being made a series regular mm-hmm. for next season, particularly based on her comments towards the end of the episode.
Well, you know that.
Yeah, well, of course, but it's sort of... they're sort of building this false sense of suspense that it's like we already know she's going to be around, right?
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that when we actually get into it.
There's
something else that I wanted to talk about in this email. Just that we've got the second season. So exciting.
And then, coming in, before we dive in, we're going to start watching the episode here and then obviously talking you through it as each week. But we will start with how it ended last week. That idea that it really was this big climax and he smashes through the window and his famous line, which I really love, and they don't do it enough. I really like those, "You have failed this city" things. So it was really sort of epic and awesome. And then, of course, we get the trailer that tells us all of the really interesting things that happened this week. And then we already knew what happened then this week, and we were waiting for other things to happen, and maybe they didn't.
Although some very important stuff happened this week, it's almost like a lot of what happened are sort of foregone conclusions. Since we found out that he's sort of hooked up with Slade on the island, and that Slade's not necessarily a bad guy, which is still yet to be seen. But
well, you get the end. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, it's still yet to be seen exactly what kind of a guy Slade is. We're seeing him in a very specific scenario right now, where as long as you're not as bad as the other people on the island, you can't be that bad.
Yeah.
Right? And Oliver, he says some stuff. We'll talk about it when we get there. But it's sort of, once we found that out, this whole idea of him training is just sort of a foregone conclusion. And we know that he's going to become Green Arrow. There's no suspense here for what's going to happen to him. What we need are some supporting characters on the island that are people that we don't know the fates of. That's what really needs to happen so that we can have a little bit of suspense.
Which I'd argue we did get at the end of this week's episode.
We got setups, yes.
We got some setups.
We got some setups.
So now it's about us diving in a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully the next time we get a full flashback episode like this, it'll be a little bit more meaty.
Yeah.
Not quite so surface, because I think this was very, like...
Thank you for saying surface, because I actually think that about the idea, the title of this episode, The Odyssey, I was expecting a bit more. And now, as we jump into it, I'm hoping this episode surprises me a little bit.
You know what? I think, just to go back a few episodes, the Huntress stuff, those were two episodes without any flashbacks. And I think that was a similar problem that we had with those, was that they were very surface.
Yeah.
When the show doesn't have that dynamic of the flashbacks... it really loses that writing style that they've really nailed. And I think it's not to say that one type of narrative is better than the other. The island and present time in Starling City, and the mix of the two. So essentially the vanilla, the chocolate, and the swirl cone. We usually get the swirl, which is what I think we've become used to.
Yeah.
I think that the writers have become used to it. But a lot of other shows are chocolate or vanilla, right? They pick a flavor and they go with that. And it's not to say that one style of narrative is any better than the other. But what I will say is that the writers on Arrow have really honed in on how to write that swirl.
Yeah.
And nail the subtext and the deeper meaning of a title like Betrayal last week, where it was like every 5 minutes we were going, oh, there's another betrayal. Oh, and there's a figurative betrayal. And there's a literal betrayal. Yeah. And it was like, it was woven throughout the episode as opposed to being sort of just placed on top. Whereas this one, the Odyssey, is very like, I mean, Oliver says it.
Yeah, which they don't, and they like, don't in some of the... I like this metaphor now. I'm now going to start calling it, oh, what a great swirl episode, or yes, swirl cone episode, or if it was a chocolate or a vanilla episode.
Yeah.
Because some of the episodes might be chocolate.
Okay, so we have to establish that.
Which one's chocolate, which one's vanilla?
I'm going to say that...
I would say vanilla Abercrombie Oliver.
Okay.
Because he's a bit more vanilla.
He's a little more vanilla. He's not. And yeah, and there's no Diggle. We have Diggle in Starling City, so yeah, it's a little bit more chocolate.
It's yummy.
That's delicious. The chocolate influence. Right?
No, it's delicious. So I want.
Was that
more
racially
swirls
insensitive to say? I don't know.
I don't know.
Somebody write us in and let us know.
Yeah. I like it. It's good. Those swirl episodes and the chocolate and vanilla episodes. That's
I
good.
Think it's okay to say that Diggle brings the chocolatey goodness.
He does.
That's good. That's all right. Yeah, that's all right.
It's delicious.
I'm going to say it's all right.
And it'll be good. So that's now what it is. If we're like, this episode was a little too vanilla, this episode was a little too chocolate, it means it's either a little bit too in the past or a little bit too in the present. But if we find that perfect swirl cone, then we're going to be
just with that little tiny like hook on the top, like the little Dairy Queen hook. Mm-hmm.
It'll be good.
Now we're mixing it because Dairy Queen doesn't have a swirl cone. That's McDonald's. Does McDonald's even have swirl cones?
I haven't had a swirl cone in a really long time. So I cannot.
We might have an official. Like, this might be the official food of Quiver.
Yes. It's now the swirl cone. It's good. I like it. We have all like
McDonald's. Call us. We're going to do some sponsorship.
Swirl cones. Mm.
We will sell out. I just want to be really clear. Like, it's not going to change our integrity on reporting on these episodes, but we will sell out. I will take money
for
just about anyone.
For hawking swirl cones on Quiver. What a random, like, non-sequitur. Okay.
But this is the thing. This is the brilliance of a tie-in like that, is that it's... First of all, we're transmedia. So there's... And there's synergy going on. Because there's the Big Belly Burger and the milkshakes.
Yeah.
Right? And so every time somebody watches Arrow, they're going to be, and then listens to Quiver, they're going to be subconsciously thinking, I could really go for a swirl cone right now. And you know what would go really well with that swirl cone? A delicious hamburger. Right? And so they're,
true.
And now they're going, well, where am I going to go to get those two things together? McDonald's.
That's true.
So.
There you go. Okay, remember how we said that this is going to be a tangential episode?
We have not even started the episode yet. Okay.
We haven't.
Okay, we are now, though. Okay, so we've just started, and, well, it's the previews. So if anybody's starting along with us, we're watching through the previews right now.
I don't understand why they do. We're so far into it that if you haven't been watching up until this time, these 30 seconds of flashback are really not going to help you catch up. That's the one thing with genre television. I feel that it's not so much a casual watch as it is a... Mind you, this is fun. You get to see some...
They just pretty much compiled all of the shirtless shots leading up to a scene from last week. Yeah. Like, that's really... I think that's how they do it. See, when you do this stuff on a weekly basis, I can tell you, doing two podcasts, you stop being creative and you start falling into formulas. So like for the text, I have a formula for the way that I write the text every week. It's for both shows, for Frontlines and Quiver. Are we in the episode now?
No,
or is it still the previously on?
I can't remember if they did this because they sort of went back a little bit.
Yeah, maybe they sort of repeated.
They did repeat a little bit him coming in because it was again the highest part of the episode. So they start with the
so that you have failed this city, and then she goes for the phone, and he very deftly knocks it off the desk without destroying the phone, but destroying part of the desk. And he's trying to figure out, he's trying to get her to confess something.
I don't like her begging here. I don't know. I just, like, she uses her children to shield her.
She's a bad guy.
She uses her children to shield her. Yeah.
She's a bad guy.
She is. I really think that she, you know what? And I'm going to throw this out there. We talked a little bit about it. Maybe it's the fact that she's a woman. I'm just going to throw that out there. He hasn't really threatened very many women that are high up in the thing. Yeah. And maybe it's where her brain goes. It doesn't make her any less of a villain. It just makes her know what emotional heartstrings to perhaps
That's just, yeah,
pull.
That's her, that's,
like, that's her thing.
Form of, of manipulation, right?
It's to be...
Because all she was trying to do, I think, there was distract him enough to buy herself time to get the gun.
Exactly. It's very, And she's a little bit composed. Like, as much as she's... being threatened, she really, like, here, when she's calling for help,
she was acting.
Yeah.
Like, that was very put on of, because she knows that when they get up there, she's going to have to play the, because I think that she's a much more dangerous person than we've been led to believe. She's threatened Merlin. She's threatened John Barrowman's character.
Yeah.
And she's got to have something, you know, she has to have some sort of guts. Yeah. In order to do that. Because John Barrowman has been very intimidating.
Can I just point out, this is my fear, to get into my car and have someone in the back seat. I always check the back seat of my car.
Because what if it's Stephen Amell, though?
Well, that would be delightful. But, no, it wouldn't. It would still be terrifying. Yeah. She handles this very well. I'll just say, go Felicity for being okay with someone in your car. And in the beginning, she kind of doesn't even know it's someone she knows. She just thinks it's this hood guy in the back of her car. She has a very strong constitution. Anyways, if you saw the little thing posted on our Facebook page, this is it. The episode, sort of word for word, they took it and made it into a comic form.
Yeah, so which was cool. I don't know where that was found. If somebody can point me in the direction of those, maybe we'll start posting them every week.
Yeah. Well, I am pretty sure I saw it on Arrow as well, or sometimes maybe it's one of those things that goes hand in hand with the actual episode. But
okay.
I don't know if they're an ongoing thing. It'd be kind of cool. And this is really great that she just sort of comes in, Diggle's got his gun, and is like...
He's quick. I like that aspect of it.
Yeah. That he just doesn't... He just has his gun out and...
Yeah, is that the second that... Like, he's so aware of his surroundings that... He would recognize Felicity's voice, I think. But that... More important than that, he's on... Sort of... He's in a defensive mode of like... I'm in the Arrow cave.
Yeah.
The only voice that I should be hearing is Oliver.
Yeah.
So like his instinct, his gut reaction is pull the gun out until he realizes that it's Felicity who has brought Oliver to the Arrow cave.
Came in and said he's heavy. Like it wasn't hi, my name's Felicity. I'm here to help.
But it's, you know what, they've fallen into this character really nicely.
Yeah.
That was a great character moment for Felicity that ties into some of that earlier stuff of her making the awkward jokes when she's nervous.
Yeah.
But maybe in a little bit more organic way, similar to how they've evolved Tommy's character.
He's wearing some... So we're back on the island now with him fighting Slade. I just want to point out, when we go back into the past, or I guess the future, he's wearing really tight leather pants. So, like, as he's lying on the thing, we never really see his outfit. We just see the hood. But I just forget that poor Stephen Amell has to wear like leather pants every week, which is upsetting when they're just leather pants. Because when they're part of like a full suit, they're okay. Otherwise, they're just
like
leather pants and tattoos. It's a bit weird. Anywho, these are the Kali sticks, right? Is that what they're doing
here? Yeah, the Kali sticks.
Which is
cool. He's been on the island for 6 months, so I think this is... We only sort of get these moments to, like, check in and find out how long he's been there. So he's been there for 6 months, which I think I'm right. His hair is longer now.
It is, yeah.
They've made a decision to acknowledge that, like, he's been there for a while.
Oh, man, I really... Oh! Foreshadowing with exactly what he learns. That maybe he's just very... You get something... Maybe I just noticed something. He's actually quite smart. I'll give Ollie that. Because Abercrombie Boy is not...
Wait, are you saying that our protagonist has good qualities? Like, maybe he's kind of smart?
I just mean that he can very much... He mimics people really well in terms of learning a move and then doing it. It's something that sticks with him. And we get a bit more of his book smarts in this episode, more so than we did previously.
So you're saying that setting up an entire Arrow cave full of arrows that he's made himself and...
Well...
Tech arrows and all of his plans and
he learned them somewhere. He had to learn. He never applied himself until he was on the island.
Yes.
So I'm saying that they're showing very well how he's applying himself to
learn.
How
he was dumb when he got there, but he's smart before he leaves.
But he's recognizing how to use his smarts.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's not necessarily
fair enough.
Technically smarter. He just recognizes that he learns things a very specific way and he had never had the need to before. Right?
Well, Slade definitely has an attitude of, like, you're an idiot and you're going to get yourself killed. And worse, you're going to get me killed, right?
Yeah.
That's very much Slade's character for this episode, right up until the end.
And I will say, maybe that was the thing that bothered me. I'm kind of like, Slade, how in one episode can you be okay then with who Ollie is? And maybe he recognizes that there's something in Ollie that will learn fast, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was the thing with Yafei, the idea that he learned... like Yafei trusted him and knew that he was smart enough to get certain things and to, right? So, oh, and I kind of don't like it when he asks other people to validate him. I feel like he does that a lot.
Oliver does?
Yeah, which is interesting. I think that's part of his journey as well. He has these sort of mentors on the island and he constantly is sort of looking for this validation, but he really finds it when he doesn't ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part when he really shines. I like this little hovel that they have.
It's a fantastic set. Like, it's a really, really well done set. And you know what? You can tell that it's a really well done set because in the next scene when he wakes up and it's day, they have that daylight streaming through. I guarantee you that this set is built inside of a soundstage, but that lighting, you would not know it. It looks authentic.
Great,
it looks amazing because they've just built the set so well
that
you feel like like you could step outside into the wilderness. But really, they're on a soundstage. So that's really great set design.
That's cool. So this is, I think, a fan moment where we have Laurel and Ollie. And
a little bit. It also might just be them having to have her in every episode.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Sometimes actors have contractual obligations when they're series regulars. And so, you know, she may have had to appear in so many episodes.
Right. Fair.
Because it's important, but I don't know that it's really just a matter of setting a mood for Oliver and where his head's at in this episode.
It's
been
cool.
6 months and he just wants to get home, mostly just to get to her. But
can I say Slade holding up that mask was a really cool moment?
Yeah.
I feel as though I was hoping for more of that. In an episode called The Odyssey, I was hoping there'd be more of where Ollie's head was going, right?
Yeah.
Like, where he was going in this death sort of dream state.
Yeah.
And instead, there's sort of him flashing back to this island thing, which is a bit incongruous. I thought, it's kind of really meta that they have him dying, and then this flashback to the past, and then in the flashback, he dreams of Laurel.
Yeah.
It's this sort of weird...
Which they used as another red herring
in the
preview.
I thought he was going to be hallucinating, and he's not. There's just a flashback. It's very
because we got that before, right? We got that early in the season.
Yeah.
In the moment when he gets drugged.
Yeah.
And Diggle is trying to save him. The last time he was...
Sort of out of it.
Yeah. On the table.
Yeah. Oh...
No, this is a great moment of him stepping on the landmine and Slade being like, you're standing on a mine.
Uh-huh.
And then they have the note that it's not Fire's men who've put this here, but it's probably left over from World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that he can tell that it's armed just by looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't think you can actually tell if a landmine is armed and dangerous
just
by looking at it. I think it's a good practice to always assume
that
a landmine is armed and dangerous.
By the way, I just have to throw that. I did poli-sci in my undergrad, and I have a lot of friends. I have friends that work for like landmine national things, and it's a big deal. I haven't done this before, like pull at heartstrings before, but landmines are a big issue. And if you're interested, you should look into them. And ways that you might be able to help.
Let's be clear. Don't look into landmines.
No.
Like, as in not, like, don't
look
into building or purchasing them.
Disarming landmines is a big deal. And there's a lot of organizations all over the world that are helping because it's obviously the landmines are not targeting people that they were in at all intended to, and it's a big civilian problem, especially in places that don't have proper medical care, and they can be quite disastrous. So let's get back to Arrow.
So back to the show.
You know, landmines are...
So Oliver is kind of screwed at the moment, and here comes some of Fire's men. Mm-hmm. So Oliver, quick thinking on Oliver's part, throw mm-hmm. the balaclava on, mm-hmm. And then that'll at least buy you a couple of seconds. Mm-hmm. I think that we're supposed to believe that Slade has abandoned him.
Here. Yeah.
But these guys come up and they're like, so what's going on? And he's separated from my unit. And they're like, okay, well, let's go. He's like, I'm kind of standing on a landmine. I like this. I'm kind of having a bad day, you know? And then Slade just comes running out and just kills three dudes in a second.
I'm impressed with Ollie for not...
Stepping off the landmine.
Like, that's awesome.
And then the great moment of he's like, stay very still, and he just pushes him off with the guy.
Yeah.
It's an Indiana Jones moment.
I feel like
there was a missed joke there.
Yeah.
Like, there's a missed there's Indiana, something Jones about Indiana Jones.
This is a great location. Hey, we tangented about Twilight. This looks very similar to a location that they used in that movie as well.
Probably is a location that they
used. Yeah. But it was much sunnier. It's really dreary. You really get Vancouver in this episode.
You do, because they spent so much time on the island.
Yeah. Oh, did you see The Odyssey on the table? That's the book there. They had that close-up.
I did not.
They had the close-up of The Odyssey on the table, so...
So there it is, on the nose.
Literal translation, so... Or translation, literal something. I don't know what I'm saying.
You know, okay, the more that we... This always happens. This happens every week. The more you start to think about it, the more I can see a little bit of the influence of The Odyssey towards the end of the episode. Because I'm trying to think, like, what are some key themes, points in the Odyssey? What are some main sequences, main themes? That sort of thing. When we get towards the end of the episode, I'll point one out. Just remind me.
I will remind you when to he point calls out Laurel at Odyssey the things.
But I... So we're starting to get the idea that we've got a little bit of it last week about this other guy that we thought was Deathstroke that isn't, that is Slade's partner.
Yeah.
Or at least was. But he betrayed him.
Funniest part of the episode, by the way, is Ollie trying to make a fire, and then...
For 2 hours, and then he just pulls out a lighter, and he's like, I'm trying to build this for 2 hours.
So great. I really like whoever this Slade Wilson is. He's fabulous.
Manu Bennett?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's delightful.
He is. He's one of those actors, I think, that he's... Yao Fei has kind of brought some authenticity to the island, but I feel like Slade's character is really putting you in that place. Mm-hmm. Mostly, I think, because we're spending so much time with him.
Yeah.
But
it's weird that he keeps looking at this picture of Laurel.
I think this is the Odyssey thing, though, right? Because the key thing in the Odyssey is him trying to get back to his wife, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Back to his family. So,
yeah.
So that's where Oliver's at. He is.
Yeah, fair enough. And then so revealing the fact that he was a bit of a bad boy, which is interesting that Slade doesn't see that, right? The idea that they just see sort of the whiny.
Yeah.
Well, I say
that's,
whiny, but
that's all they've had the opportunity to see, right? Is just sort of the spoiled rich kid who doesn't know how to really do anything for himself.
Right. Everybody is in this life for themselves. That's, I think, a through line that we get with Wilson and Slade in this episode.
Yeah.
The idea that that's what's really driving him, I think, in a lot of what he's talking about.
It's interesting because I think that Wintergreen, he calls him Billy. He calls him Billy Wintergreen. We actually did some research. Mm-hmm. I looked this character up, William Wintergreen, who is sort of Deathstroke's Alfred, for lack of a better analogy. So where Deathstroke is kind of an evil Batman, he's a mercenary Batman. Wintergreen was kind of he's described as his valet and confidant. So very similar idea to Alfred and Batman in that relationship. I'm not sure if there's betrayal in the comics because I didn't get the opportunity to read that deep into it, but But it's a very different direction that they're going in, where they're partners in a much more literal sense, rather than like the confidant sort of assistant.
Well, and you get a turning point for Slade in this episode, right? As he confronts this partner that he's had, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think that Wintergreen is this Deathstroke's motivation for being a villain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That I think up until this point, he has been heroic.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment that he was betrayed, he's now
shifting.
Yeah, he's starting to make that move. And I think the really interesting thing is that in this universe, in this version of the DC universe, that obviously Oliver is much more ruthless and much more about the vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of that influence is coming from Slade. That Deathstroke's going to be, a very big influence on
him. And we keep talking about this, the idea of Slade being a sort of evil Batman. I would say maybe it's the idea of the shades of gray with the term evil, right?
Yeah.
Because you get the idea that Ollie is not.
Yeah, well, because comic books are very, tend to be very binary, right?
Yeah.
Good guy, bad guy,
mm-hmm.
Evil hero, that sort of thing. Whereas this show is very good about walking the line. Like, is Oliver a hero? That's a really big part of this episode, because right now we've got this scene back at the Arrow Cave, and Felicity's kind of looking around at all of the gadgets and equipment and stuff and going like, you know, I really should have put it together sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sort of saying like, I knew there was something going on, but I never in my wildest dreams thought that he was the vigilante.
Well, and she seems genuinely surprised, this idea that it was her and Oliver, or him and Oliver, that took down the Count. And she gets an interesting face. I really sort of like how she's reacting to everything here.
That's where I was kind of going with it, is that she likes that aspect that, like, you mean I contributed to that heroic part, but then every time she looks around, she makes the comment that those arrows have killed a lot of people. And she's not wrong.
Yeah.
And she's totally within her rights to feel that way of like, I don't agree with what you guys are doing. I agree with the helping, with saving people and that sort of thing. So towards the end of the episode, she has her little speech. That makes a bit of sense, but she's not cool. You can tell that she has trepidations with it, because they are operating in a very gray area, and she says to Diggle, you're cool with this? Like, you seem like a good guy. You're okay with what he does?
Yeah.
And that's, they're bringing it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're talking about it out in the open, which I think is a really great thing, because a lot of shows would keep that in subtext.
Yeah.
I think it's important to have characters express the concerns that we as an audience are having, so that we know that the writers are addressing those concerns. They know that those problems are there, that we're looking at Oliver and going, is he a good guy or a bad guy? What's going on? Like, he keeps flip-flopping. One week he's killing people, the next week he's not. And I think the thing is that we're supposed to feel the emotional turmoil of the character, and like he's going through stuff, right?
Which is great.
And here he's about to. The whole plan here is that he's got one guy to take out in the tower, while Slade takes out
everybody else.
Everybody else, like the other 30 guys, at the landing strip, and Oliver's got one job. He has one job.
This tower is kind of cool. I like this, is just sort of sitting out in the...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
I like
cool
their excuse for the sort of, like, quick set job that they did. Like, oh, it's one of those temporary air traffic control towers that the military puts up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a real thing or not, but...
I would give them enough credit that it's a real thing.
You think so?
I don't know.
But the thing is, it's a superhero show, so they can go into the sci-fi
sort of
stuff, right?
Fair enough.
That that's really sci-fi, but just sort of the
that it could be a it's very MASH, I would say. So I am just going to point out that we should pay more attention to Ollie's tattoos than we have been previously, as a foreshadow.
Well,
for
I have
later
been
on.
Paying attention to them. They're just not. We haven't really gotten clear shots of them, and I think there's a reason for that. That was a great moment, yeah.
This is an interesting with the charger, how you really should...
The defibrillator.
Charger, I don't know what defibrillator...
They're not plugging in an iPhone.
Okay, fine. But I love that she was like, you didn't say clear.
Yeah, because okay. She was touching the table.
Yeah.
And she pulls her hands away and goes, you didn't say clear. And then the next time he does say clear. But it doesn't... The paddles don't work.
Yeah.
And she runs over and she goes, it charged...
So
it's probably just a wiring problem. She runs over and she fixes it in like a split second.
And she says, wires are wires. How cool is that? Like, you really just get that she's super... And we've said it, she says it here, she's been fixing computers since she was 7. It's kind of cool, you're getting a little bit of Felicity.
So like where Oliver is Batman, mm-hmm. Diggle is Alfred, Felicity is Lucius Fox.
Those
who've seen the Chris Nolan Batman movies. Who is essentially the tech guy who puts together all of the fancy stuff. So I think one really cool thing is that Oliver has put together some technological stuff, mm-hmm. but as we find out at the end of this episode, he's a little bit outdated with some of his equipment. So now maybe we'll get to see a little bit more cool gadgets.
That could be cool. Because
Felicity might go like, well, we had this thing lying around, or I put this together for you.
That's awesome.
Or him going to her and saying, I need something for this.
I would love him to pull out an arrow, shoot it, and go, cool. Because he didn't know that the arrow did that. Yeah. She just, like, changes his arrows. Or something like that. So, Ollie phoning. So, this, I totally got a Lost vibe from this episode, right?
It's the first episode
I ever watched of Lost, if that's going to give you a mind blow episode, was the episode where, yeah.
Not a good place to come
in. It was so confusing.
So, this is where I'll say the allegory of the Odyssey mm-hmm. kind of works a little bit, is because he should not be doing this. This could mm-hmm. be the thing that gets them caught. Yeah. But he does it anyways because he misses her, the idea of Laurel. So that's sort of his siren song moment, mm-hmm. right, of him mm-hmm. sort of almost crashing the ship on the rocks all for a pretty girl, essentially. A little bit, and it's extrapolated a little bit, but I think you have to. You can't be literal with it in this circumstance, right?
Well, it's very interesting that he... This is the first episode that you really get his longing for Laurel. And maybe that was on purpose in terms of what they've been setting up.
I think what they're trying to set up is that he's... Same thing that we got in the Huntress episodes, is that he's lonely. Mm-hmm. There's a loneliness in what he's doing, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He has a moment when he comes out of his sort of coma situation that he's in right now with the gunshot. And he is genuinely excited mm-hmm. that Felicity is there and that she's fixed up the computers and that maybe she's going to be part of the team.
Yeah.
And I think that that's coming out of a place of, like, he needs companionship. And mm-hmm. Diggle is good, but
he's really closed himself off from
the world, and he needs some people that he can rely on. And next week, I think we'll see more of that.
I just want to point out how long it is they're taking to figure out this code. I feel the people on the other end would be like, are they reading the Odyssey? Like, how are they not? Nothing is born that is weaker than man. Interesting. You were saying something about this code, the idea of the Odyssey and the code that they have. So nothing is bred that is
nothing
weaker than
is
man.
Nothing is bred that is weaker than
man. You were saying something about the idea that perhaps it's all tied in with the cult of the squiggly lines and the idea of whatever this big plan is. The Undertaking, that's what it was.
The Undertaking,
gosh!
Yes.
Oh,
the Undertaking.
20 minutes.
Because they've referred to it in a manner that makes me think that it's very much...
Ra's al Ghul-esque.
Okay, so the whole thing about the gentrification of the Glades,
mm-hmm.
and Merlin says, that's not part of the plan.
Yeah.
That's not part of the Undertaking.
Yeah.
You know that. We need to get this back on track. I think that there's an aspect of, they want the peasants to be revolting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
to use an old joke.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they want. They want that
desperation.
Yeah, they're looking for that sort of this I can't find the words right now, but they want this scenario of like the downtrodden being downtrodden
right.
and the rich being so rich that they're untouchable. which is where they currently are, right? Which is where the Queens and the Merlins are right now, is in this sort of high up in their towers, and sort of trying to get rid of that middle ground, I think is what they're doing. Because, who knows why, but that idea of nothing is bread that is weaker than man, sort of going into that idea that they're manipulating human beings, right? Yeah. Like they're in the business of, and I think it's a world domination plot, right? Like I think that it's like we start with Starling City and we go from there.
I think it's a making them godlike thing. The idea of having these people to like that they put themselves above man, like the idea that these underlings are sort of what they will be, and that it's only through middle class that something else can happen.
Yeah.
And if they just keep subordinating people, that's okay. We talked over this idea. Sorry, Slade is going to blow up the island, and right now we have Ollie saying that he's actually going to go save Yaffei, and it's a turning point in his idea that he wants to be a better person or be something different. So you get this set up early. If based on what we're talking about, this idea of the Undertaking being a real about a division in humanity, you really have Ollie finding who he wants to be, I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And recognizing the choices that he wants to make. And I mean, you notice later on, he doesn't kill someone. Like, he's making choices very specifically about what he's going to do. So.
Yeah.
And he loves his family. So I think it's interesting that he's okay. He understands that Slade needs to make his own choices. So he's recognizing what Slade said earlier, right? The idea that everybody's out for themselves.
Yeah.
And he's not resenting Slade for that at all. He's sort of saying, fine, do what you gotta do. I'm gonna do what I gotta do.
Yeah.
Can you at least just do this one thing for me? So talk to my family. And I don't know what he wanted them to say. Call my family? Like, what? Okay. Yeah, sure. Call your family.
To let them know what happened.
I guess. Okay.
To let them know that he didn't die.
Yeah.
On the boat. That he didn't die. Maybe didn't die in vain. Like, he died trying to save someone.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. That they thought Ollie was flatlining, but really it was just a lead coming loose. Sorry, it's kind of interesting. There's just, like, a whole bunch of, like, comic-y, relief-y stuff going on while Ollie is dying. I really like Felicity. It's good. Felicity and Diggle have a great dynamic in this episode.
Yeah. By the way. Well, this team is coming together, and I think that's a really important part of this. Mm-hmm. And she picks up the bow and she's like,
this is the conversation between her and Diggle about what bothers her, him.
Yeah, but she picks up the bow because she's kind of fascinated by it. And you can see that. Like, she doesn't pick it up to play with it. Mm-hmm. She picks it up to try and understand it. Mm-hmm. Like, to look at it. And then she has that moment of, this is what he used. This is the weapon that he has used to kill people. Mm-hmm. She has that moment. But I think that what she's doing there is she's sort of picking it up, looking at it, and she may be coming up with, like, in her head she's already thinking of, and I could put a laser sight here, and, you know, we could do this and do that. And I think that that's what's going to happen with her character, with bringing this team together. And she's going to fulfill that role. Mm-hmm. It's going to be good.
There's so much potential now from this episode. All I can see is the potential of it. You get a nice Diggle reveal in this episode as well. We really didn't talk a lot about Diggle and his through line in this story, but there's a bit of a revelation here that we get from him. This idea of he's done things that he might not be proud of, and recognizes that the role he had in protecting this warlord was perhaps not the right choice. You get a parallel for Oliver, I think, in what is happening here, like the idea of who he's... It's interesting. We haven't really had that before, right? And I don't know. I'm grasping at straws, but I'm trying to tie in the Odyssey a little bit more. The idea of casualties when you're fighting a war could be to do with the Odyssey. Who knows? I'm just trying to think of what would be maybe a nice parallel. This episode, I'm going to reach out to our Quiver listeners a little bit. If you have some other nice insights into this episode, let us know. I really want the dialogue to be a bit deeper, and I know that it's probably there, but I just can't, I'm not on it as much as I could be. So we have Oliver now, so he's gone back to find Yaffei and I guess take him back with them, right? So as he will discover, there's a reason why Yaffei is not leaving the camp and why he's making the choices that he is making. He calls him a stupid boy. I think that's kind of funny. That he just... There's an interesting dynamic between the two of them. And as we had said, heard earlier that he was being manipulated, they said this her, mm-hmm. you're staying for her, not what who. So we know that there's someone, some reason, something that's happening. And I like that that was actually revealed at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
So.
And then he has to think quick, so he just knocks out all over. Just punches him. Mm-hmm. And then we got, man, every time Fires walks into a room, yeah. it's like Wintergreen just waits 5 seconds and then comes steps into the room after him.
It's true. I think that that's actually like what happens. He's like a little puppy dog. Yeah. yeah.
It's a little funny how that works, but I don't think that we're gonna have to worry about it for much longer.
Yes, that's true.
In fact, I know we're not gonna have to worry about it for much longer.
Yeah, okay.
Which is very good. Interesting because that character in the comics traditionally very different character, so they're mm-hmm. taking it in a totally different direction.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I like that about this. What we talked about, and probably one of the best things that we'll always come back to is the idea of the Royal Flush Gang. Taking something that was very much iconicized in the comics and making it real and making it different and using it for its own, like, for the show and making it yeah. what it is for this show particularly and this version of...
Well, just allowing it to be its own universe mm-hmm. and yeah. not... It's very much like the Batman Begins way of doing it. Bane mm-hmm. is... They borrowed ideas about Bane mm-hmm. for Dark Knight Rises, mm-hmm. but he was very different from anything in the comics.
Right.
At the same time, so it's very similar in their approach to this show where that is Yao Fei, but he is very different from the Yao Fei in the right. comics, and Slade is very different from the Deathstroke in the mm-hmm. comics. And so one thing that does, I think, unlike Smallville, where in Smallville we had these characters established, mm-hmm. and then they were always kind of going towards this one point, in time.
I just point out that the quote here, he said, it's impossible to be a hero if there's nobody worthy of being saved or worthy of saving.
Yeah.
I just want to just point that out. I just noticed it as I was reading these
That's subtitles. Cult of the Squiggly Line talk, if you ask me.
It is, but it's still resonating, right? The idea that he still doesn't identify as a hero. Who is that? Who's worth saving?
Because
he's not a hero. He's not. And he's self-professed as not a hero, right? Yeah. Like this idea. Sorry. Continue your thoughts. I just want to.
So where Smallville had the characters established, mostly of Lex and Clark, mm-hmm. and they have this ultimate destiny mm-hmm. that they're moving towards, mm-hmm. They've done a lot in Arrow to mm-hmm. point out that yes, this is Oliver Queen. Yes, he is Green Arrow. Mm-hmm. Is he the same character? Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. Is he like at the core the same person? Yes. Is what's going on with him similar? Yes. But are the finer points the same? No, they're not. It's a very different story.
Right.
So we can start to think Deathstroke has been played as maybe amoral, not necessarily good, not necessarily evil in the comics. Mm-hmm. He has been at other times totally evil. I mean, in mm-hmm. the Teen Titans cartoon show, Slade was the bad guy. Mm-hmm. But in this, I think that we're playing him as a little bit more where Oliver is a vigilante, mm-hmm. Slade is a mercenary.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, he has his own reasons for doing what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Oliver does it for the greater good. He mm-hmm. does it outside the channels of the law, so mm-hmm. he's not quite a superhero mm-hmm. yet. But for Slade, it's not even about the law. It's about his own personal motivations, yeah. which makes him much more mercenary in his in the way that he goes about things.
Mm-hmm. It's great, though. I really like this duel between Slade and Billy. It's very interesting. You get sort of this gruffness to Slade, and he's such a great character, whoever this is. It's just, I really hope that he sticks, we get more of this on the island, that he really becomes an integrated.
Well, I think we will, because we did see the mask in that first episode, yeah. with the arrow through the eye. And it's the mask is the opposite mask from mm-hmm. the one that Wintergreen was wearing. So
here you have the throwdown. So Ollie just did the throwdown again, and he's gonna and he has the gun, and he doesn't shoot him. He hits him over the head. So it's choices that he's making. But I also just want to say interesting that. Oh, I don't even know what I was going to say about Ollie. Something about him learning and being able to kick butt, which was great. Oh, yeah, that it was just, he's just so ungraceful with that gun. When he was grabbing Slade and he was just sort of like shooting the machine gun, he's just very... He's just shooting it and very ungraceful. So it's
That's what we call cover fire.
Yeah, okay.
He was just trying to create a situation which they could run away.
On purpose, which is...
But I just wanted to point out that Wintergreen had one of Deathstroke's knives, his sword things, in the eye. And it's actually, that looked like the eye that traditionally Deathstroke is missing. So who knows? Who knows?
By the way, this is great, him just pulling out a bullet. Slade did a great... sort of in... Oh my gosh, you didn't puke, I swallowed it. That's a funny line. There's some funny little things in here. I like this episode.
Did you miss that the first time?
I did. They keep finding cool ways to make me laugh.
He kind of chokes after that as well, and it is a good moment.
So, Slade being tied up and saying, "Why were you tied up? I was afraid I might kill you," I think is an interesting realization for Ollie about Shades of Grey. That he hadn't really... possibly considered beforehand. And also this joke, my only friend is named Wilson. I thought that was funny.
I'm trapped on an island.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that he's on an island and the island is called Purgatory, which I think is a Lost reference. I think that is them saying, like, we realize that you can no longer maroon someone on a mysterious island without people drawing an analogy to Lost.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're just going to address
it. Yeah.
It's called Purgatory in Mandarin, okay? Just leave it alone. We know. But this is a really cool moment of him saying, like, you know, we're going to have to figure out how we're going to survive the next 3 months or whatever until we can get off this island.
Mm-hmm.
And Oliver goes, I thought you said that if we didn't get off the island today that we were going to die. And he goes, the idiot that I was training... would have, but you'll be good. Like, cause so he's shown him that that he's got this capability. In pulling a bullet out of his arm and managing to swallow the puke instead of throwing up, and you know, taking the guy down and all of these sorts of things. So maybe
what I'll say. Again, I'm trying to pull these things out of the air, is the idea that in the Odyssey, things kept distracting Odysseus from going home.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what a lot of this is the idea that they now have a partnership, they're going to wait another 3 months until the plane comes again, they're just going to find other ways to deal with this.
Yeah.
And they had a handshake in there, too. I'll notice they did a close-up of the handshake between Slade and Ollie. Anyway, sorry, Yafei, his daughter, obviously here, is being held captive. So I'm wondering why Yafei is so integral that he had to go and kidnap his daughter. I find it very interesting, and I think that this tattoo reveal, so here we get that her tattoo, is going to be important later. So it's just very interesting. I want to know what Yafei is in all of this.
Yeah.
So,
Well, he must be important because he was important enough for the Australian
to have to go.
Yeah, military to send in two specialists to pull him out, right?
Yeah.
So,
which is
and important enough that Fires and his men have been looking for him, and so Yafei, there's more going on. than
he
we
gone
know.
Wrong? Sorry.
Yeah, it is. That was the knock at his terrible cover stories.
Right. Oh. by the way, Felicity here just destroying that evidence through the computer. I think that's fantastic. And a brand new upgrade. So I like this. Not the great part of the '80s with Madonna and leg warmers. I had a day talking about technology, so it's just very interesting to see how cool. Being invited into the team, Mr. Diggle. I find that weird that people call him Mr. Diggle.
Yeah, because well, like yeah. I just call him Dig most
yeah,
of the time.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't
yeah.
even say Diggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say Dig, but yeah, and she doesn't. She's not ready to join them just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But she does want to find Walter because mm-hmm. he was nice to her, which I think. Mm-hmm. That line needed another pass, but...
Because
he was nice to me.
Yeah,
But it's... You get it. Like, yeah. I think what they were getting at is that she is an IT girl.
Yeah, and she's okay being...
I think it was more a sense of he was always good to me.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, he was always... Yeah. He treated me mm-hmm. with respect.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good person. I know he's a good person. He,
yeah.
Whatever's happened to him, he doesn't yeah. deserve it. So mm-hmm. we need to rescue him, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
And then I can just go back to being an IT girl. But she's going to... there's the handshake.
And so there's the handshake. So this is me pointing it out.
Just
that
like...
just like Sladen.
Yeah.
So you got a little prodigy thing, or progeny thing going on there. The idea of people taking other people on and partners and
yeah.
all that jazz.
Yeah, so I think she's gonna get a taste for it,
mm-hmm.
and we've already seen that. You pointed it out, the idea that she helped them take down Vertigo,
mm-hmm.
And when she did that,
mm-hmm.
when she found that out, there was a little bit of like, there was a sense of pride, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
job well done, you know,
mm-hmm.
I made a difference.
Yeah,
and I think once she gets more of a taste of that,
mm-hmm.
and I think definitely once.
Mm-hmm.
we uncover the truth about what's going on,
mm-hmm.
that
she'll have more motivation to
yeah.
do so. Because that's definitely what it is. She's not stupid, and she recognizes how dangerous things are.
Yes.
Which Diggle, again, points out afterwards. So we're talking over this idea of his mom. So we're right back here where we should have been within 5 minutes of the episode starting.
Yes.
The idea of what's going on with his mom. Right?
Yeah, we kind of took a break from the regular story.
Yeah, to
this,
go back to the flashbacks.
For the flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
But they did do this in a way that hopefully they can pick it up next week. But they won't pick it up next week because it is... Although, who knows?
Who knows, yeah.
Those
trailers
just
can sometimes be misleading.
Don't judge a book
so.
By its cover. So,
yeah.
Next week could be a very...
Mm-hmm.
a swirl episode
yeah,
where we
yeah.
get a lot of layers.
Mm-hmm.
And in those layers
mm-hmm.
we get...
Mm-hmm.
We get what we're looking for here, which
mm-hmm.
is just a little bit more
mm-hmm.
truth
mm-hmm.
about what's going on with Moira.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think they're also holding back because we do have
oh,
the last chunk of this
Sorry.
Episode.
And we'll point out the same tattoo.
Yes.
So I love that. The idea that it's a visual
thing. On the same shoulder.
Same tattoo, same shoulder as Yafei's daughter. So...
So I'm gonna guess right now that Yao Fei also has one of those tattoos. I'm gonna guess that it has something to do with why Yao Fei is important,
right.
why he's so well trained,
mm-hmm.
and that Oliver is going to train with Yao Fei in whatever scenario that is, in some sort of a
so interesting.
Hidden fortress sort
of some kind
situation.
Yeah. Ugh. So exciting that those tattoos are also meaningful. It's great.
And Detective Lance shows up just so that he can give a derisive scoff towards Oliver
yeah.
and then leave.
Yeah.
Essentially saying, you know, Oliver shows up and it's like, well, where have you been
yeah.
All night? And he's like, I was at the club. Bad reception.
Yeah, cover story.
Yeah, terrible cover story. and he's... finding out in quote fingers dink dink
mm-hmm.
that Moira was attacked by the vigilante
mm-hmm.
and he has the line. He says to Detective Lance, oh, did you get some sort of evidence?
Like, yeah,
like I don't know, like maybe a blood sample.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little bit too on the nose because
yeah.
I think that Detective Lance looks at him and goes, I can't prove that you're the vigilante. But I know that you're the vigilante.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
rub it in my face.
Yeah, which is
right?
just...
Because
like, yeah,
like,
yeah.
he kind of gives him a look of like... And maybe it's just, your mother was attacked.
Yeah.
And you were busy building a nightclub.
Yeah.
Too busy to answer your phone. Like, come on, pal.
Yeah.
And so, but I mean, I think... Oliver could save a kitten from a burning tree.
And
Detective Lance would be like... So would you set the fire?
Yeah.
Come on, pal.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, he'd give him one look and just be like, come on. Yeah. I don't believe your act for one second, so.
So, I'm going to put this out there again and again, because I have all of these sort of pipe dreams that aren't maybe necessarily going to come true, but there's still that potential. We had it in the brilliant episode where Detective Lance needed his help to save Laurel, right?
Yep.
The idea. I think that once they discover this big bad going down, that Detective Lance will not be as adverse to working with the Green Arrow as it perhaps is pointed out in these few episodes. Like, yeah. I honestly feel that there is the potential for that relationship to change.
Yes.
And to be very... Because I think that just Paul Blackthorne is just doing such a good job of making this such a solid character and us really having this empathy for Detective Lance and wanting him to recognize
that. I think also we're going to get, at some point, an episode that is very... focused on him.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to find out about his drinking and all that sort of thing. We've gotten a couple of hints at stuff.
But we haven't actually seen any of Laurel's past.
Nope.
We haven't done any flashbacks. They haven't even had a lot of speculation about stuff. We genuinely just have... this episode was the first time where you have something where you got her on the phone in the place. So it's not like...
yeah.
They just had a voice on the other end of the phone. We actually flash back...
it was her, yeah.
...to her... it was the first time.
And you know, like I will give them, especially Katie Cassidy,
mm-hmm.
the huge props mm-hmm. on it, because she seemed younger.
Mm-hmm, she did.
Like,
yeah.
She was doing the same sort of thing that Stephen Amell does
mm-hmm.
with Oliver, in
mm-hmm.
that, like, he's playing two characters,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
which makes me think
mm-hmm.
we're going to see more. So I think at some point,
yeah.
when we get that Detective Lance-focused story,
mm-hmm.
I think we will get flashbacks to Laurel 5 years ago.
Mm, that would be great.
Because yeah. You're right. At some point, we do need her side of the story.
Yeah.
And it'll be at that point when we need to find out. And who it, that might be when we get to see Alex Kingston.
Okay.
Alex Kingston might not show up in the present. She may only be in flashbacks.
Ooh, interesting.
At least in this season, right?
Right.
Like, they may be setting stuff up for later on down
yeah.
the road.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's a good possibility that we will only see her in flashbacks. Maybe by the end of the season, we'll get an episode of that's what
yeah.
we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Which, we've just gone on a total tangent, because that has nothing to do with anything in this episode. But just with what I think we want
to
see.
I think that it does have something to do with this episode. It has to do with the fact that there's such a clear distinction in episodes like this, where it's mostly island stuff, where they genuinely
yeah.
have a story there, which we keep talking about since the beginning,
yeah.
the idea that there's two stories that we're watching right now
yeah.
on Arrow, and we don't really know where either of them is going. Like, in
yeah.
the past, we know what becomes of Arrow, but, I mean, we don't know what happens to Yao Fei, we don't know what happens to Slade Wilson, like, it's hinted at in all these ways, but we really don't, but what we do know is that they're all somehow connected.
Yeah.
And so that's the ultimate sort of thing that now with the second season, I wonder if they have to even reveal it after this season. Because they
yeah.
know now, I think early enough on in the process, that they might not have to wrap everything up in a nice little bow for us this season.
Yeah.
And it could be interesting and sort of a bit nerve-wracking going forward.
Yeah, yeah. I think... one of the things, and we said this the last time we got a very island-heavy episode, a very vanilla episode, as
mm-hmm.
we'll now refer to them,
mm-hmm.
That it's much more plot-driven than it is metaphor-driven. So, because, like you said, on the island, there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, like, we need to understand how Oliver gets from being
mm-hmm.
Abercrombie Oliver to Vigilante Oliver,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is a lot of, like, connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
And when they focus on that story, that's what happens. My problem is that then when we switch back to a chocolate episode, it is very... it tends to be kind of eh.
Yeah.
Like, the Huntress episodes were all right.
Mm-hmm.
There was a little bit of analogy in there in sort of in a foil
mm-hmm.
for him and him looking at Huntress
yeah.
and going like, this
yeah.
is what I have to not be.
Yeah.
I have to be careful not to go down that road.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of pulled away from
mm-hmm.
that and
mm-hmm.
I don't want to be that much of a vigilante. Don't want to be sort of a renegade
mm-hmm.
vigilante. So, yeah, it's interesting. I want to see more flashbacks to the island. I want to see flashbacks to what's going on with everybody else. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult because that becomes a very different show, like we said in this episode. It's a much more... I don't want to say surface because there's other stuff going on. It's not like there aren't layers. Mm-hmm. But it's not the same as some of those great episodes that we've talked about that... that just have that... The writing is at just at mm-hmm. such an amazing level sometimes. Mm-hmm. Last week's episode had so much depth to it.
Yeah.
And like I said, it was woven together. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just... It wasn't layer on top of layer on top of layer. It was a bunch of layers stuck together. Mm-hmm. And just... You can't pull them apart, because when you start pulling apart the threads, it falls apart. Everything had to be exactly where it was in exactly the right configuration in order for that to work. Which, that takes a level of skill that a plot-heavy episode like this doesn't require.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where we, coming off of last week and some other episodes this season, come off of those and we're like, wow, that was awesome, that was so great, that was so intense. So much information about the characters without needing plot points to tell us.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas a big this part, episode, it was a lot of like, well, then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. So obviously, this is how the characters feel.
Right.
It's like, well, in last week's episode, nobody needed to turn around and say, "You've betrayed me."
Right.
Nobody said that at all. The word betrayal, I don't think, came up in the entire episode.
I think Moira said it to.
You think someone. So?
I think her and "you've betrayed me in the past" or "I don't trust you." There was something that was a bit more literal.
But this is the thing, maybe a little bit, but they kind of always skirted around.
Yeah, that's true.
Around the subject, right? Yeah, it was always sort of based on that idea.
Yeah.
But it was very like, because Laurel and Detective Lance had their moment of like, I can't trust you anymore.
Yeah.
You used me.
Yeah.
And so there is a sense of betrayal in there. But it didn't need to be explained to us.
Yeah.
They didn't need to say it.
Yeah.
Whereas in this episode, it was like there was the Odyssey sitting on the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he says, oh, that's a quote from the Odyssey. Yeah. And it's sort of like, it was almost a little bit too ham-fisted like...
And, I mean, people know, I don't know if we talked about this, but the whole thing with the Odyssey is he does spend, like, a chunk of time on an island. And that's the big... So anyways... I just realized that we didn't actually.
And also, like your point, I think it was a really good point. And I think that the Odyssey is a very good allegory for the whole story.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think that it was necessarily. Maybe they just wanted to plant the idea.
I guess.
With an episode entitling it "The Odyssey," and sort of having it right there on the surface, because maybe we wouldn't have gotten that. I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the idea that he goes off on this journey, he leaves on a boat, is shipwrecked, and then has to fight his way back through all these different trials in order to get back to his life. Mm-hmm. But when he gets back, he's not the same person that he was.
Oh, and he's, oh my gosh, Odysseus is the greatest archman in the world.
That's the thing about him
is that in the end, He's the only person that can string his bow, and that's how Penelope, finally, he gets back and he's disguised, and she says she'll marry whoever can string the bow and shoot through all of the arrows, or all of the little rings, and it's Odysseus that does that, and then she marries him, and then it's like, just kidding, I'm Odysseus, aha, all is well. So, there we go. I can't believe I missed the most obvious thing about it. I knew there was something, there had to be a reason of something about it. So the idea of Laurel being his Penelope, and the idea of like getting back to her and being able to be the best archer and win her.
Okay, so then maybe what we need to do is we need to take this as a cue, and much in the same way that when you look at Superman, you have to look at the story of Moses, because that's one of the main inspirations for the story of Superman. The whole idea that Moses was placed in the reeds and taken in by another family, and Kal-El is sent from his home to another planet, and becomes a great man and a leader by inspiration, right? By being a model. That in the same way, maybe we need to do a little bit of research on this and find out if this is something that's maybe they've come up with this specifically for Arrow. But when you start saying that stuff about Odysseus being an archer, and like you're like now I'm
totally getting.
I'm
it
right
now.
There in that episode of Wishbone when I first learned about the Odyssey.
Yeah,
because being a kid of the '90s.
And there's a big thing. I work at a theater company that did Margaret Atwood's Penelopeiad is actually the Odyssey from Penelope's point of view. Okay. And the whole thing is when Odysseus comes back, they hang the 12 maids that were with Penelope for like betrayal or something. There's something, and I can't really fully remember what it was, but Odysseus is not a really, like, when he comes back, the Greek was a horrible, bloody thing, and these women that had been waiting on Penelope and trying to be there protecting her, because they somehow betrayed the house, they all get hanged in the end. So Odysseus comes back, and while he comes back a hero, and he is the hero of that story, when he comes back, he's not a benevolent person. He's still who he is. And so there could be an element of that, the idea that if the city, if he feels betrayed by the city, and if there's things that he needs to fix, he will, no problem. I love this podcast. It totally has just made me reevaluate everything going into this meh episode and just coming out being like, okay, I get it, the Odyssey, I get it.
Yeah.
So now, thank you for having this conversation with me and helping us realize. We'll look into the Odyssey.
When are we going to learn that we need to give them more credit?
I know.
But this is the thing, okay? This is what it comes down to. This is the crux of it. Artistic intent is important to the artist that is creating a piece of art. But to the consumer of art, artistic intent it's irrelevant. What comes across through the art is the most important thing. So I think what's happening here is in some episodes the artistic intent and what's being conveyed in the art in the finished product are very clearly one and the same. I think in this episode maybe there's a bit of a disconnect there, and I think maybe the disconnect is coming from the fact that they're trying a little bit too hard to make it apparent. But now that we've sort of discussed it, we've digested it a little bit, and I'm sure that by next week you'll have thought about it more.
Yeah.
And we'll come back and we'll talk about it, and we'll be able to say, and this, and this, and this. But it is a little bit more... we have to look a little bit deeper. Now that we've sort of unlocked it, we can start to understand it.
Yeah.
And so that's where artistic intent becomes a really tricky thing, because I think you've just hit the nail on the head, and that clearly this is the artistic intent was for us to start drawing all of these parallels. Here's a problem. The Odyssey is not something that we're all intimately familiar with. We may be sort of peripherally familiar with it because everybody learns about it at some point in school. Especially if you do, you know, literature stuff, that sort of thing. But I think having a more intimate knowledge of that of that subject matter would have put you in a better position in this episode to be like, oh, and that. Oh, and that.
Right, yeah.
Oh, and that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we need to reassess.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's good. Coming out of that. Yeah, that's exactly what I feel. Interesting.
So now that we've unlocked that episode, let's talk about this preview for next week, and let's go into it with a positive frame of mind. Diamond heist. But this guy isn't stealing the diamonds himself. He's using these electric shock collar things.
I don't know what this...
But I don't know where Roy Harper is going to come
from. Possibly he was that last person. So we had McKenna with a gun pointed at someone. So possibly it's that person that the gun is pointed at.
We see Felicity without her glasses and you cannot recognize her. I'm pretty sure.
Are you sure? I thought it was someone entirely different.
No, that's totally
her. No way, really? With the collar on?
That's totally
her.
Get
out! Holy...
That's totally her. Put glasses on that face.
No
and
way,
pull her hair
really?
Back. That's her.
Why is she wearing a collar? That's so weird. I want to know where the intent for this comes from, but...
The collar? It's one of the shock collar. The
yeah, but how did it get on her? And she's in some sort of... Anyway, so it'll be interesting to see sort of how that... So Felicity, an integral part of next week's episode. Are we sure? That does not look like her at all. That's crazy.
That is her.
They are really...
But that looked like... That guy looks like the same guy...
Yeah, as it is earlier.
Yeah,
so it's not
the bad guy. So that's not Roy.
Maybe
this person on the motorcycle is Roy?
I don't know who Roy is then. Maybe he's going to come in at the end of the episode. I don't know. Very odd. So, maybe we just got revealed too much to us that
yeah.
that Roy is coming in next episode. Maybe yeah. it doesn't have a lot to do with him. Maybe it's a superfluous plot point. Anyways, maybe this trailer is entirely misleading. Yes. So, as I would actually...
This trailer is entirely misleading because every trailer has been misleading.
Yeah.
They're doing a very good job of keeping us on our toes. Yeah. Showing us something, getting us excited for next week, but at the same time going, we're not going to tell you what happens.
Yeah.
And then they go, like, tomorrow, or, well, probably today, maybe tomorrow, they'll have an extended look on the YouTube channel or on the Facebook page, and that is oftentimes one extra line of dialogue.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, an extended look, and you get, and it's like, that wasn't really extended. Yeah. Like, yes, it was a little bit more, but
so
I don't know anything extra.
Here's hoping that since last week's trailer was so epic, and then we thought this episode was going to be really, this was a real, real thinker of an episode, as opposed to, which is weird, it wasn't as, anyways, maybe next week, because the trailer is a bit underwhelming, maybe the episode will be really intense. Or it could be a villain of the week. We haven't really had one of those in a while.
Yeah.
So maybe, why not? Let's just get a villain of the week that's not Count Vertigo. And,
Fair enough.
We'll see where it is.
Yeah. Well, we didn't see any of the island flashback stuff, so
that's true.
Maybe whatever's going on the island is interesting and ties in. Yeah.
And so,
what's the episode titled?
That's really good. Dodger. Sorry, Dodger, yeah. So, as we're wrapping this episode up, and we've been talking a little bit about Swirl episodes, Chocolate Vanilla, past, present, I just want to point out, now with the second season, how long can they extend the flashbacks, so past, present? What are they going to do?
Five seasons.
And this is my thing. Then what are they going to do? Maybe jump ahead 5 years, so then you have to get, so that you jump ahead, and then
like
you
Lost.
Get Green Arrow, and then you have to go back and find out where they, how they got there.
Be
upset.
Lose it.
Yeah.
No, like, in a good way. Like, if they did that,
if
we got five seasons in and they were like, by the way, we've run out of backstory,
so
here's forward story.
Yeah, which
and they start throwing in stuff like, here's a reference to Batman.
Yeah.
He's not going to be in an episode,
but
we can reference him.
Yeah.
Here's a reference to Superman. Here's a reference to a world with superheroes.
Yeah.
And now we jump back to an episode that's like the establishment of superheroes.
Yeah.
But we'll have to wait and see, because we got to wait and see who else shows up, when they show up, and how they show up.
Right? But anyways, so that was my sort of best case scenario.
Yeah.
They'll run for 5 seasons, run out of flashback, and have to jump ahead 5 years.
Look, Smallville ran 10 seasons. Supernatural just got picked up for its 9th.
Yeah.
Will almost certainly get a 10th. Probably finish in its 10th, I think. Because that sounds like a good round number.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they have Arrow, they've currently got Vampire Diaries, and they've got... Well, is Nikita... Nikita didn't get picked up.
It wasn't one of the early renewals, but but those three, Supernatural, Vampire Diaries, and Arrow, were all coming back for another
year.
So
they've kind of got... They've got the next year shored up, I think, in their tentpole shows, in these three shows. Gossip Girl just finished, didn't it?
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure it did. Because it turned out... Spoilers! It turned out that one of the guys was Gossip Girl the whole time.
Oh, come on! Not that I was ever going
to
watch it.
This is the glory of Tumblr, is that you don't actually have to watch shows to know how bad shows are. Because there are, in fact, moments when Gossip Girl gossiped information about that character in earlier seasons that was detrimental to that character.
Uh-huh.
That it's like... If you are, in fact, Gossip Girl, why would you have said those things about yourself?
It's misdirection.
Why would you have told people that you cheated on so-and-so?
Yeah, yeah.
That seems like a really bad idea.
Interesting.
Right? So,
I'm wondering, my sister reads the books, I wonder how... Anyway, we tangented again, we were so close to finishing! Oh, no! Sorry, everybody.
That's it. I think that Arrow is going to be a very long-lived show. I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon.
And I think the way that Stephen Amell is connected with this character, I really think that he's going to be okay and sort of in for a long haul, which would be great. I really hope that. And I hope
he doesn't Tom Welling and... that's a whole other thing. Tom Welling has a personality that goes along with having played that character for so long. Is detrimental to his career, in my opinion. But
interesting.
I don't want to say he's full of himself, because I don't think that that's what it is. I think he's just very closed off as a person.
I will.
And I don't think that's a. I don't think that's a good way to be as an artist. I know a lot of artists, and I know ones mm-hmm. that are outgoing, personable, mm-hmm. fun, energetic, mm-hmm. exciting, mm-hmm. and then, you know, that comes through in their art. And sometimes their art can be totally different from that. Mm-hmm. But I also know some artists who are very talented artists, but who will never get anywhere because they close themselves off, or they hold themselves in a certain esteem.
Tom Welling started much younger than Stephen Amell did.
That's true.
And was thrown into something and told how to be that, I think, in certain mm-hmm. aspects. And it just came, I think he was given, I mean, not that he didn't work for it, but he was given things in a different way than Stephen Amell was.
Yeah.
And I think especially, I don't know, Stephen Amell started his blog again. So you can see that he's been working like for a long
Superman
time.
Having a character like Superman is just, very different from having a character like Green Arrow.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that Arrow is going to be the thing that finally puts Green Arrow on the map for mm-hmm. a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I think it already has. I mean, a lot of our listeners have not read a Green Arrow comic book, mm-hmm. but watch the show and now may pick up a Green Arrow comic book, which I hear that the New 52 stuff has been pretty good, and that they've switched up a lot of the creative teams, mm-hmm. and the new creative team is supposed to be really great. Awesome. So, and I don't think that those issues have started coming out yet, but I think that's something that people are anticipating. So if you're looking, or maybe it was Brian, it might have been Brian Milne who posted something on Facebook and said that it was a good jumping on point. Cool. This either the most recent issue or the next issue.
Cool.
It's a very different animal. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that's a different situation. But Stephen Amell comes into it with a very different attitude.
Yeah, and we love him. Again, we'll just point that out.
And I love Tom Welling. I don't want to. I don't want to say anything.
Yeah, because he's.
The only reason I would say something like what I said mm-hmm. is out of genuine, sincere concern that I want to see him in more things.
Right. Yeah.
He was Superman for 10 years, and for me, he holds that title as much mm-hmm. as Christopher Reeve does, mm-hmm. and I hope as much as Henry Cavill will.
Oh, I'm so excited. Because
Man of Steel looks unbelievable.
You guys
will probably get a special Man of Steel episode when that movie comes out.
Oh, man, let's do that. Yeah.
I'm not promising anything.
Let's do that. You know what? I'm holding us to that. No, okay, I won't. It depends on what the summer's like. But it would be great.
Yeah, that's too far in the future. But
Yay, Man of Steel.
But yeah, I mean,
yay, 10 seasons.
I think the important thing about both of those actors, about both Tom Welling and Stephen Amell, is that they're really owning the character.
Yeah.
And Stephen Amell, I think, like you said, he's in it for the long haul. I think mm-hmm. the thing is that with Smallville, there had only really been one or two other shows like that before, one of which being Buffy, right? Like, I would say, like, it's Buffy and then Smallville.
Yeah.
And those are the two shows that kind of kicked off the whole genre explosion of what we have now of like Terminator, Sarah Connor Chronicles, Chuck, and just like, I mean, I could name a couple dozen shows that we've gotten mostly on the CW mm-hmm. Over the last few years that over the last 10, 15 years since Buffy mm-hmm. that. Oh man, has it really been that long since Buffy
started?
Isn't
that upsetting? Isn't that really upsetting?
Wow, we're old.
That it's, I know.
We're getting there. But those are shows that established this mm-hmm. this genre of television. Mm-hmm. So I think for Tom Welling coming into that, mm-hmm. he was really setting a benchmark and sort of leading the way and mm-hmm. opening doors for a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. And now Stephen Amell gets to come into it with the perspective of, and I'm sure that people at the CW, and I'm sure that the showrunners are under the impression that if this show goes well, it's the next Smallville. Yeah. That's the point, right?
Yeah.
Smallville ended, mm-hmm. and CW spent 2 years. I mean, while Smallville was still on, they were trying to develop that Grayson show, right? The Dick Grayson origin story.
They also tried to do Aquaman.
While Smallville was on, so. Yeah, like, they're very much in the DC superhero business.
Yeah, which is
so
great.
And
I'm glad this one stuck.
Yeah, so I think, like, the second that this show became the highest rated show mm-hmm. on the CW, that they went, so, 10 years, sound good? And I think that now the writers and the showrunners are probably looking at it like, Much yeah. like we are,
yeah.
what do we get ourselves into?
Yeah.
Because it's a long haul yeah. commitment now. Because the show's, it's going into a second season. It's, yeah. I guarantee you we get at least five.
Yeah.
We get at least five. Maybe yeah. I'll eat those words, but I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
Anybody who listens to Frontlines knows I'm usually right about that.
So. Yeah, about how long things are.
Not just about my predictions for right. shows.
Oh, that's good.
I watch a lot of cool. TV. Right? It's got to be good for something.
Yes.
All these DVD box sets.
Yes, they've come
have
in
to
handy
be good for something
for talking about TV.
Yeah.
It's great.
Now, if only we could shore up that lucrative McDonald's swirl cone sponsorship. Deal. Watch, we'll find out that McDonald's doesn't do swirl cones anymore, and like they'll be like, please, they'll look at a cease and desist. Yeah. They'll be like, please stop talking about swirl cones.
Just, we
as
don't
if
do
we
this.
Have that kind of influence.
Yeah, it's good. There'll be like this weird blip in McDonald's swirl cone sales next month, and
yeah.
people will be like, what? What's going on?
But really, like, kind of like localized.
Yeah, localized.
Like, just these kind of
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
Nothing big enough to start anything, but not too small not to be noticed. I'd be like, is something going on here? No. You guys should start hashtagging it or something.
Swirl. Awesome. Hashtag
yeah.
swirl.
Yeah, hashtag swirl. Swirl.
Swirl.
Swirl cone.
Swirl cone.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay.
Yay. All right, well...
I think we're done for this
we
week.
We really
before,
are.
Yeah,
it's
before
great.
We run off into another tangent
yeah.
area. Thank you guys so much for listening to us ramble on this
mm-hmm.
week.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a good episode.
It was,
I
yeah. It's fun. Thank you. Thanks. I love a rambly episode. Sometimes
yeah.
It's good. Follow us on Twitter and keep the conversation going at Quiver Podcast. Also, send us email. We like that. mail@quiverpodcast.com. Facebook.com/QuiverPodcast, where we post lots of awesome, cool things, like a Valentine's Day card to you from Michael, which is great.
And stay up to date on QuiverPodcast.com, even though we don't really have news there, because that's not something that Amanda and I are really good at. But I don't know if there's maybe anybody listening to this that thinks that they're good at that. They could always shoot us an email at mail@QuiverPodcast.com and.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can figure something out.
That'd be nice to have
wouldn't it be nice to
site?
Have news on our website?
Yeah.
It's great. Really great on CloneWarsPodcast.com. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Tim.
Yay.
Tim Gracci, who does my news over there. Because I don't do any of it. There is like almost daily content posted on CloneWarsPodcast.com. And I am not responsible for it, which is the greatest thing in the world. But that's it for us this week
yes.
before we go off on more.
Thanks, Arrowheads. We'll catch
yeah.
you later.
Yeah, we'll catch you guys next week.
Went up on the end of that ending.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't really...
Catch you next week. Now.
It's kind of our thing.
Yeah.
Not having an
still
ending.
Still
have an ending. He just muscled his way onto that set, established himself in there, and just told George Lucas, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And when you're Harrison Ford, that's okay. But when you're Samuel L. Jackson, I think you need a little bit more direction. Because people want to talk about George Lucas writing wooden dialogue.
No.
George Lucas wrote the same dialogue for Samuel L. Jackson that he did for Ewan McGregor and Ian McDiarmid. Ewan McGregor and Ian McDiarmid sound authentic as Jedi and senators and whatever.
Yeah.
He sounds like a puppet. Like he sound like the guy Terrence Carson, I think is his name, that does him on the Clone Wars, does a better job than Samuel L. Jackson did. And he does a better job while mimicking the staccato
oh, really?
delivery of Mace Windu, of Samuel Jackson in that, in those movies. Which is, it's just so funny when I'm watching the Clone Wars and we see him, because he breaks up the cadence the same way, but he puts much more emotion and inflection into it. Yeah. So it's like, it's Mace Windu, and you get what maybe the intention was, or right. where how it could have been.
Yeah.
But Samuel Jackson, I think he was sitting on a set that was mostly blue screen, and just sort of delivering the dialogue.
Yeah.
And George Lucas isn't a competent enough actor director to stop and say, I need you to emote a little bit. I realize you're a Jedi and that you're stoic. Stoic doesn't mean constipated. Like, get it out, right? Like, that's what somebody needed to say to him. But I guarantee you that George Lucas did not feel comfortable in the room with him. They probably did, like, as friends when the camera wasn't rolling. But the second that the camera was rolling and he was his boss, it was like, no. Samuel Jackson said he was going to be in that movie, so he was in that movie. Samuel Jackson said he wanted a purple lightsaber, so he got a purple lightsaber. The only purple lightsaber.
Oh,
right? And that's why he has one. He said, I want a purple lightsaber. And George said, nah, you're a good guy. It's blue or green. Bad guys get red.
Yeah.
And he said, I want a purple lightsaber. And George went, I'll see what I can do.
Wow.
Right? Like, purple lightsabers had existed before in like the comics and the video games and stuff like that, but not in the movies, right?
Yeah.
So that moment right there, and Samuel Jackson tells that story with some sort of pride, that he compromised the vision of visionary director George Lucas by telling him what to put in his Star Wars movie.